But it does help in some situations. And one of the things I say when I'm giving talks, it's a cheap, readily available, calorie neutral, drug-free means of self-help.
I love that. Dr. Richard Stevens, Senior Lecturer in Psychology at Keele University, thank you. Is swearing in sport acceptable? Someone said, sweary sports people. There was a lot of bleeped out swearing on Bake Off last night. Oh, well.
The Voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
Good morning. The government told British nationals to leave Lebanon immediately as fighting between Israel and Hezbollah escalates. The Ministry of Defence says additional troops are being sent to Cyprus as part of contingency plans to evacuate. Our Middle East correspondent Hugo Bechega has been speaking to us from the capital, Beirut.
The problem here is that there's only one functioning commercial airport. So if this airport has to suspend its operations, many people are stuck here because the only way to leave the country by land is through Syria, which is obviously not an option for many people. So that's why I think lots of countries are now urging their citizens to leave the country.
Israel says it's intercepted a missile from Lebanon in what appears to be the first time Hezbollah has fired at Tel Aviv. The group says it was targeting the headquarters of Israel's intelligence agency Mossad in retaliation for recent attacks.
The Prime Minister is attending the annual UN General Assembly and before heading to New York sat down with me for an interview here on Five Live Breakfast, which we'll play you in just a moment. But one of the topics I asked him about was donations of clothing and gifts.
Now we're in government, I think, if you take, for example, clothing, I think that's, you know, when the hurly-burly of an election campaign is one thing. We're in government now, and so you won't see clothing declarations from me again.
So will MPs be able to take freebies in other forms outside of clothing, Labour MPs?
Well, I think every MP has to exercise judgment, and I would expect them to exercise judgment.
So you're not
judgment.
Banning all gifts?
Well, you have to exercise judgment. I expect people to exercise judgment. And the rules in place, the framework, is quite rightly that all has to be declared so that everybody can see it.
Senior sources have told the BBC there's growing unease within the NHS in England about the government's message that the health service is broken. There's concern some of the comments and claims have gone too far and could result in lasting damage to patient and staff confidence. The Department of Health says it's important to be honest about the scale of the challenge facing the health service.
Prosecutors in the US have charged a man with the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Ryan Ruth was already facing two gun-related charges after he was accused of pointing a rifle through a fence at Mr. Trump's golf club in Florida earlier this month.
And according to global research, children's eyesight is steadily getting worse, with one in three now short-sighted. Researchers say COVID lockdowns had a negative impact as children spent more time on screens.
Katie's here with the sport and a decent day in the end for England in the cricket despite the rain.
Absolutely. England's interim captain Harry Brook responding with his bat to criticism at Chesler Street yesterday as he hit a first ODI century. It helped England to a 46-run win against Australia in the third match. That was done via DLS method because of the rain. But it keeps the series alive. And he says his comments last week about not being fussed whether his side were getting caught out going for big shots were misunderstood. He's clarified, "I didn't mean who cares if we lose. We still want to win, but you don't want to go out there and have a fear of getting out." Elsewhere, there were no big upsets in the Carabao Cup last night. Christopher Nkunku scored a hat-trick as Chelsea thrashed Barrow 5-0 to reach the third round. City and Villa both drew as well, with John Duran scoring once again, while Leicester squeezed past Walsall on penalties. And at the Road and Paracycling World Championships in Zurich, it was gold for Britain's Kat Ferguson, Felix Barrow and Fran Brown on day four.
Let's hope Dan Bigger is still in the office, Rachel, and the speakers are up. We've had a text. Dan Bigger, "I was in Japan for Wales against Fiji into the second half. We were losing. Fiji flying. Dan gets knocked out accidentally. The mainly Welsh crowd fell silent. It looks bad. After extended treatment on the pitch, the stretcher is brought out, but somehow Dan refuses it and walks with help off the pitch. The whole crowd lifts him, cheers him off. If he hadn't have done that, we would have lost the game. I have goosebumps writing about this 5 years later. Absolute legend."
I just asked him outside what was the biggest hit he ever took, and he says it was in a game in 2015 against Australia. And I've just found the moment. Actually, I think it was a tackle by Sean McMahon from Australia on Dan Bigger, and the picture of it you can see there. And he's like, "I remember that moment. I remember the contact." And when you see the picture, you can realise why.
And this one in Fiji, he got knocked out, so that must have been pretty bad. Let's take a look at the weather. Helen's here. Hello.
Well, thank you very much. Hello there. Good morning. Some slippery weather out on the rugby pitches today because there's more rain coming into England and Wales. For Scotland and Northern Ireland, it's a cold but bright and sunny start for many. Little bit of mist and fog. And it should stay that way for quite a large part of the day. But for the northwest of Scotland, a pestering of showers and a chilly northeasterly wind keeps the temperature about 10 degrees. And elsewhere across Scotland and Northern Ireland, bar just a rogue shower, as I say, mostly dry, but the cloud will tend to increase from the south. The rain's on the way for Northern Ireland towards tea time. For England and Wales, well, that rain is already with us in patches across the southern half of England, but the heavier rain is starting to show its hand across the south and west now, and that will track in across southwest Wales this morning, across the Midlands, southern, the rest of southern England this afternoon, into East Anglia and northeastern England by the time we get to tea time. So some pretty miserable conditions. We're expecting another inch of rain today, and then that becomes slow moving for northern England. So concerns, real concerns, that we'll have, well, up to 80 millimetres or more rain here through the next 48 hours. The temperature's fairly academic. If we see the sun, 17. Generally speaking, 12 or 13, though.
And how about the roads, Orna? So, a lot busier now. The M56 eastbound towards Manchester, 7 at Bowden, an accident in one of the lanes. The M1 at 28, Alfreton, long queues all around the roundabout. A couple of lorries and a car collided. One lane still closed northbound. M18 south, Yorkshire, and heading south at 2 near the A1M, still heavy after an accident. The M6 is really slow southbound past Birmingham. That's because of an accident which cleared. It was near Junction 7, all lanes open now. M25 not great, clockwise queues 12 at the M3, a breakdown in one lane, queues to 9 at Leatherhead, then the Dartford Tunnel, the left hand side is closed, two lanes closed anti-clockwise means queues back to 3 at the Swanley interchange, the M20, and the M2 in Kent westbound, Junction 5 at Sittingbourne partly blocked after an accident. Orna Merchant, 5 Live Travel.
The Voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Breakfast.
Good morning. It is Wednesday morning, just after 8 o'clock. Claire and Rachel here with you this morning. This is the point in the programme where we tell you all the stuff that's happened so far in the show, the things you need to set yourself up for the day. And the important thing is the developing news coming through to us this morning from the Middle East.
Yes, the Ministry of Defence is sending 700 troops to Cyprus to prepare for the possible evacuation of British nationals from Lebanon as the conflict between Israel and Hezbollah intensifies.
So Keir Starmer has told British nationals to leave the country immediately. We spoke earlier to our chief political correspondent, Henry Zeffman.
I mean, I was struck that there was almost nothing about foreign policy in Keir Starmer's speech to the Labour Party conference yesterday, despite it dominating, I think, so much of his first 3 months as Prime Minister. But it's certainly going to dominate his next few days in New York. It's an annual thing, the UN General Assembly. You basically get every world leader descending on New York for a few days at the same time. But clearly it comes this year at an acute moment of global crisis.
So we'll be speaking to Sir Mark Lyall-Grant, former UK ambassador to the UN, in the next hour.
Before he left for New York, though, I spoke to the Prime Minister in Liverpool yesterday. Another chance to hear that interview next.
Also in the next hour, we'll look ahead to tonight's action in the League Cup, and we're going to be joined by one of the up-and-coming stars of British tennis, Sonny Cartel, who won her first WTA title earlier this month.
And continue to keep your thoughts coming in on our In My Opinion, do we need a clampdown on swearing in sport? Well, the Welsh rugby legend Dan Bigger joined us a few minutes ago, and he says it would have been a struggle for him.
I'd be absolutely skint if I was fined for swearing in sport on the pitch and things like that. Yeah, I would be having fines left, right and centre.
So that was Dan Bigger. You can listen back to that on BBC Sounds just before 8 o'clock. There may have been some strong language swirling around in Downing Street because of this argument over winter fuel payments and freebies that doesn't seem to go away, has been dominating the Labour Party conference all this week. Well, after he gave his speech yesterday, there was an opportunity for us to sit down with the Prime Minister and talk to him about all of this. So we discussed freebies, we discussed that row about winter fuel payments, and also about the pressures of moving his family into Downing Street. But I started by asking him about his time in Number 10 so far and whether he thinks it's going to plan.
We've been acting to plan, which is we said we'd come into government and start by fixing the foundations. And if you look at what we've done in the first 3 months, we've already shown that change has begun. And that's why I listed in my conference speech all the things that we've already done, whether that's setting up the National Wealth Fund, launching Great British Energy. The NHS is back up on its
feet. I understand those are your aspirations, but it has been personally tough for you. Your personal popularity rating has slumped down 21 points amongst all voters, 28 points among Labour voters. That surely can't have been part of the plan. And the row over winter fuel payments and freebies has really bitten hard, hasn't it?
Look, I didn't come into politics to spend my time looking at opinion polls. I'll be judged, and rightly judged, on whether I deliver what I said we'd deliver at the at the election.
On that stage, you said it was a shared struggle. Well, we had this text from a Five Live listener, Ian in Neath, who says, if it's a shared struggle, where are my free clothes?
Well, look,
it doesn't feel like the struggle is being shared equally.
Well, the struggle is across the NHS, across our economy. These are big, serious issues. The government left a complete mess on top of the economic mess. We've inherited a prison system which is bursting at the seams.
But I have to make you aware that our listeners are fully aware of all those issues. Yeah. You presented them repeatedly through the election campaign. What they want to know is how you're going to move things on from here. And there is a dissonance between politicians taking thousands of pounds in freebies and pensioners being asked to give up, many of them, this critical payment. Now, can I just look at another issue? For example, on the freebies, you received, over the course of the last Parliament, £35,000 worth of football tickets for free. The Taylor Swift concert, £4,000 worth of hospitality there from the Premier League. Now, there is an issue there, isn't there? Because your government is engaged in a process of setting up a new football regulator. So if you're taking freebies from the Premier League, can't you see how that raises concerns?
Well, let me just deal with that, because, as you know, I'm passionate about football. I go to a lot of football games. I've got season tickets at Arsenal, which I fully pay for. I go with my boy. But because of security that I've had now in place for some time, and obviously that's gone up since I've been Prime Minister, then I can't sit in the stands where my season ticket is anymore. Therefore, the club and other clubs have said, well, you can be our guest in the director's box. Now, that doesn't cost the taxpayer a penny. A sum of money is allocated to it. You don't pay for it because you can't buy a ticket in the director's box. And so that is purely about my passion for watching football in relation to other elements on the register. Some of it is for accommodation. When we were running into the election, my son was doing his GCSEs. And we had lots of journalists outside our house. I'm not complaining about that, but I had promised him faithfully that I would give him an environment in which he could calmly get on his one chance to do his GCSEs, and therefore we relocated somewhere else, a gift, which we then allocated a sum of money to. So sometimes what sits behind these are human explanations. Mm-hmm. But look, now we're in government. I think if you take, for example, clothing, I think that's, you know, when the hurly-burly of an election campaign is one thing. We're in government now, and so you won't see clothing declarations from me again.
So will MPs be able to take freebies in other forms outside of clothing, Labour MPs?
Well, I think every MP has to exercise judgment, and I would expect them to exercise judgment.
So you're not
judgment.
Banning all gifts?
Well, you have to exercise judgment. I expect people to exercise judgment. And the rules in place, the framework, are quite rightly that all has to be declared so that everybody can see it. But my MPs, my cabinet and I are focusing every day on the job we're elected to do, deliver the change for the government,
so let's
for
look
the
at
country.
Important policy announced today, Homes for Heroes, and care leavers and domestic abuse victims. So what's the detail? How many homes? When are they going to be available? What's that going to cost?
Well, I'm really pleased to make those announcements today because they're very important for veterans, for care leavers and for those who have been subject to domestic abuse. The only reason we can do it is because we changed the planning rules. We've taken a decision which the last government was too afraid to take. So we now need to change the regulations to allow it to happen. But the commitment I've made is that all of those who are homeless will have a roof over their
head.
When
will that happen?
Well, we need to pass the necessary regulation and get on with the job. I haven't got a date, an arbitrary date that I'll give you.
And do you know how many homes you're going to need?
Well, we've looked at the numbers that we need, assessed it, but we're only able to do this because we've turbocharged the planning. That is the only reason
we can make
that
commitment.
But I understand
that, but you can't tell me the number of homes or how much this is going to cost. You haven't worked that out yet.
No, of course that's been worked out. That is all being worked out by the relevant department. What I announced today is the commitment to do it. And when I make a commitment like that, I also committed to the Hillsborough Law. These are serious commitments. One of my big criticisms of the last government is that it promised things which it didn't deliver. I've been really careful only to promise what we will deliver.
And
it's a huge mistake to do other than that.
Very much on board with that and very interested in that. Just finally, you mentioned your son, and I've got teenage kids. I'm right in the thick of those years, so I absolutely understand those pressures. And I often actually wonder what it is like for them and for you as a family making that transition, the scrutiny of being life in number 10. Can I ask how you are all managing and how that's gone?
Well, look, it's been tough for the kids. I'm not pleading a special case, but it's tough. They're 16 and 13. That's a very sort of important time in their lives. What we've done, Vic and I, is to be really clear that we won't name them in public. We won't have photographs done with them in public. We'll try to sort of put a ring of protection around them so that even living in number 10, as they now are, they can live as normal a life as possible and, you know, go to the same schools, have the same friends, do the same things they did before. And that is the way we've done it up to now. I intend to keep doing it. But, you know, is it really difficult for a 13-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy to have to relocate from Kentish Town with all their friends, the security of the house, the only house they'd ever lived in, to somewhere else? Yeah, of course it's difficult for
them. Fully appreciate that. Have you managed your Friday night dinner yet?
Well, no, because every Friday night has been mucked up with work, but I think
a few people were suggesting that might happen.
Well, no, but and of course it happened in opposition. The point I was actually making when I talked about that, which I do really stand by, is it is important to carve out time for your family. Whether that time is will vary during the week, but I do genuinely think it's important for all politicians, me in particular, to have a quiet time with my wife and my kids. Whatever day it is, it is really important for the family. I think it's important. I think you make better decisions if you sometimes get a little bit of distance and spend a bit of time with your family.
Dragging them to the table is often the hardest part, isn't it? But that's another issue. Thank you, Prime Minister.
Thank you.
So that was Keir Starmer yesterday. I mean, huge reaction to this from you this morning, whether you felt it was right to focus on the freebie story or not. So, for example, freebies will never go the way if the media keep bringing it up. Another one from Rob. Why did a couple who are only earning over £200,000 need free grifts? It's absolutely disgraceful. But this one says the BBC is a disgrace. I'm a listener. I don't care about free clothes. I care about reversing 14 years of Tory misery. This line of questioning is pathetic.
Yes, this one says when Keir said he took the hospitality football tickets due to security, you should have asked him to offset the freebie by paying from his own pocket a charitable donation worth £35,000. And this one, I don't know whether you've read it. Have you read Andy in Swinton?
I haven't.
If Labour answer another question with 14 years of black hole or broken this and that and the other, I will scream. What we need is a detailed plan, not endless excuses and blame, because they don't have one, says Andy. And Sam and Devon, Sakir seems to be confusing achievement with aspiration. We will see in time if the two align. Nikki is going to be taking your calls after nine and asking Starmer your verdict. Let's speak to party members who have been in Liverpool the last few days. Michael Chesham is a Labour Party member, a writer and an activist. And Krish Daryanani is a politics student and an ambassador at the European Youth Parliament. Morning, both of you.
Morning.
Morning.
Let's start with you then, Michael. You were both at the conference yesterday. What did you think of the Prime Minister's speech?
Yeah, I mean, look, the atmosphere here, I think there are two big kind of mistakes that you can make about this conference. One is self-congratulation. And I think, like, ultimately, you know, always, you know, we've just won an election for the first time in 14 years. Of course, people are going to be happy about that. But actually, the underlying position of Labour is pretty weak. We got 33.7% of the vote. That is very, very low. We lost 500,000 votes. 500,000 fewer people voted Labour in 2024 than did in 2019. And Keir Starmer's personal approval ratings are pretty much through the floor. And I think there are two mistakes. One is to self-congratulate and to think that everything's going fantastically. And the other, I think, is to say things aren't going very well because, oh, we haven't handled the media very well, or there's this story about freebies and so on. And that may be true. But actually, the big problem here is that the politics aren't yet right.
I mean, I guess you could argue, Michael, that they haven't really been in power long enough to make the difference. I mean, he said in that speech, judge me on my record. That's why I don't look at the polls.
Yeah, but what we need to be hearing here, I mean, look, 14 years of a Tory government has torn the country apart. It has wrecked public services. Wages are lower now than they were in 2008. You know, this has been that we've gone through a decade and more of food banks and riots and poverty and misery. And what we need Labour to do is have a radical programme for government where it's willing to, you know, do the basics, tax the wealthy, bring things back into public ownership, create universal public services again that actually function.
And that seems to be coming down the line. That does seem to be coming down the line with, and you know, there's going to be a budget. They say that will underpin the finances to achieve all of those things. Let's bring in Krish now, politics student. What did you make of it, Krish? I mean, you know, the actual slogan was change begins, change has begun. Do you believe him?
Yes. Look, I mean, I think, you know, we've been ready, you know, to change Britain for so long. I mean, 14 years of Tory chaos, failure and infighting has been a terrible thing to see. And I slightly disagree with Michael. I mean, I think the mood at this conference has been so optimistic. And Keir Starmer's speech was just representative of that mood. You know, I mean, it was such an inspiring speech. And I think change has begun. I mean, people talk about things like gifts and things like that when we should be talking about, for example, something like the Renters Reform Bill, you know, which is a great change and something that's so much really needed. So, as I say, change has begun and change will continue, but we need to give the government time to bring about the change that we want. A decade of national renewal, it doesn't happen in 5 minutes. It doesn't happen in 10 days. You know, you need to give them time.
Michael, do you want to come back on that?
Well, look, there is absolutely no reason why we need to be cutting winter fuel allowance for pensioners. There is no reason why there is still a two-child cap. And a lot of the policies that Labour is still putting forward are a repeat of failed Tory policies. So I'll give you an example of that. There was a motion yesterday that was supposed to go to conference floor about immigration. And this was a motion that was supported by the leadership. And it would have committed to Labour to deport more people more quickly and to declaring countries as safe in order to deport people there more easily. Now, that is a cruel, a reckless policy. It's a repeat, an endorsement of the Tories' immigration policy. But what we saw again was an attempt to simply repeat that, to accept it as Labour Party policy. In the end, actually, that motion was withdrawn because whoever was proposing it knew it would lose. And that is interesting.
Well,
what you see is actually there isn't support amongst Labour Party members, amongst unions and so on, for some of the policies that the leadership's putting forward on them.
It's interesting that I just wanted to butt in here because it's interesting you should take us into that territory, because obviously we've seen hecklers, excuse me, in conference, and the Prime Minister had to deal with a protester yesterday. Let's take a listen.
My sister was I think this guy's obviously got a pass from the 2019 conference. We changed the party.
Now, Krish, he made that one line. It sounded like quite a rehearsed line to sort of throw at protesters. The problem with that being that this young person was interviewed afterwards. He was, you know, raising his voice against arms contracts that Britain still has, sending arms to Israel. And he didn't join the party till 2022. What did you make of how he dealt with that?
Well, look, I mean, I think we went in line with international law to cut the arms sales a small amount. I mean, that's all we can do is follow international law. You know, I just think that we need to be talking about the change that we want to bring to Britain rather than these little small things like heckler or gifts. You know, that's just my view on it. I think Keir Starmer delivered an inspiring speech. You know, he talked about, for example, the riots, something that's really important to me. And he said, the far right will never win. The thugs will never win. And I just think it was inspiring. And that's what we need to be talking about.
I mean, I guess what a lot of young people, they don't see Israel Gaza as a small thing. And they see these arms contracts as a very big thing indeed. What did you think, Michael, about the way, because we're talking about dissent within the party and different views on different issues. What do you think about the way he dealt with that?
I thought it was insulting. I thought it was an incredibly, I think, obviously, you know, a rehearsed line to deal with any protester. But I mean, that was somebody who got up, I think spontaneously. I think they've said in interviews afterwards, I don't know who they are, but said, pretty spontaneously, got up and said, there's a genocide happening in Gaza. Labour is still allowing weapons to be sold to take part in what are almost, I mean, you know, without a doubt, war crimes. And that is not defensible. And I think to dismiss this as sort of like, oh, you know, he's got a pass to the wrong conference, we've changed the party. I mean, what does that say? I think what's interesting here is that the way that the this discussion is playing out is very much in terms of just talking points, but it's not engaging with like the reality of people's lives. So the reality is that there's a genocide going on in Gaza. The reality is that, you know, I mean, Chris talked about, you know, the riots and the far right and dealing with that. But again, what we have too often from the leadership of the Labour Party is repeating the Tories' agenda around small boats, okay, an anti-migrant okay agenda.
Listen, I'm going to give a final word to Chris there. You know, just answer that one then. You know, you see, understandably, you see hecklers marched out during a speech, but I guess the overall impression when they push back votes on winter fuel payments till all the main players, excuse me, have left the conference, there is a feeling that maybe they are dodging the difficult conversations from their own side. What do you say to that, Chris?
They aren't. I mean, look, if anything, we are the government that makes tough decisions, and we brought about this difficult conversation because we really need to make the change. And the way to do that is to start fixing the foundations of the economy and get the public finances back on track. And a winter fuel payments is the start to this, and it's not the end, because more needs to be done. And as I said before, change doesn't happen in 10 minutes. Change doesn't happen in 10 days. You know, you need to fix the foundations of the economy, to grow the economy, and to give back to working people after that. And I'm so confident in this government that they will do that when they've fixed the 14 years of Tory mess.
Thank you both for joining us. Chris Duryanani, politics student, ambassador at the European Youth Parliament, and Michael Chesham, who's also a Labour Party member and a writer and activist. Slightly different views from within the party there, as you heard. Your views, as ever, welcome. 850-58.
Matt Shawley,
BBC Radio 5 Live.
We are looking for a member of Matt's Parliament for New Forest East. Mick has got a claim. Hello, Mick.
In 1997, I proposed in a little hotel. I was actually in the bathroom.
What?
We were getting ready for dinner and I wanted it all to be sort of sorted before we went in and celebrated.
Lisa Nadi, such a safe culture major as well.
We're toughening up the system to make sure that people who are unfit owners can't become football club owners.
Matt Shawley,
Monday to Friday from 2
on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Thank you so much for your texts on our interview with Keir Starmer. We'll get to some of those a bit later. And also a reminder, Nikki will be taking your calls on this from 9 o'clock this morning. What you make of Starmer's speech yesterday and his performance as Prime Minister so far. Let's talk about the football. Let's talk about the League Cup. Chelsea, Manchester City, Leicester City and Aston Villa all got through their third round ties last night. And it continues tonight. Arsenal hosting Bolton. 5 Live Sports going to bring you full commentary of Liverpool West Ham. It has been a tough start to the season for the Hammers. We're talking about this in Monday Breakfast Club, weren't we? They've just won once in 5 Premier League games under new boss Julien Lopetegui.
We need to have all our strengths put in thinking about Liverpool to be able to compete with them and to beat them. It's not going to be easy task, but we have to think that it's possible and we are going to go. We are going to have the plane thinking that it's possible.
Let's talk to former West Ham midfielder Matt Jarvis. Morning, Matt.
Good morning.
It's not really going their way at the moment. And I know a lot of questions were asked after that 3-0 defeat at home to Chelsea at the weekend and the way that Lopetegui set them up for that game.
Yes, it wasn't a great game, unfortunately. I think it's more that everyone's just expecting this big change. It's going to be great football. It's going to be this and that. And it really wasn't. He started with Alvarez as a centre half, and it was like a man for man press around the whole pitch. And you had like Wan-Bissaka, who in my opinion is probably the best 1v1 defender in the league. He was sort of going into the midfield and pressing high up in like the number 10 role. And they just kept on getting done in behind. And it was like a, you could just see it happening. It happened like 2 minutes before Jackson then went and scored, and it didn't change. So it was a worrying sort of game. They have had a fantastic transfer window. It's just got to be time to get everyone firing now.
Yeah. I mean, I know it's early days in the season, but do you think he's still got the backing of the team, Lopetegui?
Look, he's definitely going to have the backing of the team because, you know, these players, a lot of them are new that they've come in. Some of them have not been there that long. You're still playing your main man, Bowen, as captain and giving him that license to go and play. He's got exceptional players in there. It's just about trying to get everyone playing in the correct position and the correct style, which he's already said that they've got Todibo and Soler that, you know, it's going to take them time to settle in, which isn't great because they are big players that need to come in and make this team better.
Yeah. How easy is it for players at the start of the season when things don't start well? Because you want to set the tone. So clawing your way back from that, how do you manage that mentally?
You go to Liverpool and win.
Simple as that.
Simple as that. No, it's hard. It's training. It's training. It's working it out on the training field. It's working it out with your teammates. You know, if it was me, I'd be speaking to my fullback. I'd be speaking to my centre forward, my midfielder, to try and work out the best way that they could either give me the ball or how I could get them the ball. You know, you've got to have all of these conversations. And yes, there's going to be different languages. There's going to be different ways of getting this across. But it's got to be worked out on the training pitch. And that is a must. So, you know, these games are going to come thick and fast, but as long as you're working on that with your teammates, you're going to be able to, you know, get some confidence from, you know, some hopefully going to get a good performance from them tonight against Liverpool, which is going to be difficult.
Well, it's whether a good performance will be enough, even if it's not a winning performance, and history is not on their side. One win at Liverpool since 1963, so they've got a bit of work to do. But then I don't know what kind of a team Liverpool are going to put out or how seriously they take this competition these days.
Yeah, that's not a great stat. I think Liverpool will, obviously they'll have a strong team, whatever it is. They will make changes. But I think, you know, Lopetegui's already alluded to, he will make changes as well, which, you know, they do have a really good squad, but you've got to start thinking that he's got to at least get a performance from this team. And that's going to be, you know, Somerville, who was a bright spark against Chelsea. He actually come off in the 54th minute and the crowd made their feelings shown by the boos that he was coming off. You know, he's a player that could come and play again tonight. I think, you know, Antonio will probably come back in. You've got Irvin that could play. These are players that want to go and show everyone why they should be in the team. So it's a chance for them to hopefully come in and play.
Cheers, Matt. Nice to talk to you.
Pleasure.
Take care. So Five Live Sport will bring you full commentary of Liverpool West Ham. That's an 8 o'clock kickoff. They'll have updates of Arsenal Bolton and also updates of Manchester United's Europa League game against FC20. It's 8:32.
And Nikki joins us from 9 morning.
Hi, Claire Roach. I loved your description, Roach, earlier on of the media circus going in for your 8 minute slot one after another. It reminded me, Roach, of interviewing Ringo Starr many years ago, and I was just going in for my 8 minutes, and the PR person said, "Don't ask him about the Beatles, or he'll walk out."
So the equivalent would have been, "Don't ask him about the freebies."
That's right. Well, I thought, oh, goodness, what will I ask him about? His dreadful new album? Anyway.
You're in dangerous territory there, Nikki. You did ask him about the Beatles, though, didn't you?
Yeah, I got around it. I didn't know the story. I got around it, yeah. Anyway, yeah, first conference speech by Labour Prime Minister for a long time. Round of interviews. Your brilliant interview was fascinating. In the hall yesterday, when he talked about controlling immigration, welfare reform, laws to stop benefit fraud, many sat on their hands when he said, "Change has begun, housing plans, nationalising railways, a real living wage, ending the doctor's strike, we've only just begun." White lace and promises, they lapped it up like Larry the Cat or Keir's kitten. So, and has the free gear Keir row changed your opinion? A man who did risk the biggest pitfall in politics, go me, a paragon of moral probity and then gifts galore, free designer glasses for a man who made £404,000 in 2023. Or is that all froth and nonsense? Some of you are saying to us, shut up, you're a bunch of Tories. Well, when we did phone-ins on Johnson and Truss and Sunak, we were Labour BBC, now we're Tory BBC. Clearly, some people want to turn us into North Korean BBC. Get behind the dear leader. So your sober assessment of the Keir leader, your considered assessment, your passionate assessment, all views gratefully donated. That's at 9 o'clock.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693. Text 85058. Text will be charged at your standard message rate.
Message on WhatsApp 08085 909 693.
Visit bbc.co.uk/5liveterms
for our terms of use and privacy notice.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Slightly distracted by that new jazzy music to Nicky's number thing.
It's like someone's out with the old Glockenspiel.
Was it a Glockenspiel or a xylophone?
Well, I think probably the AI equivalent.
Yeah.
Nobody actually plays anything anymore.
Fun with some sticks.
Nobody plays.
Right, let's take you through the headlines, shall we? Sir Keir Starmer has told British nationals in Lebanon to leave immediately. In an interview with the BBC, Sir Keir said the government is making urgent contingency plans, including sending troops to Cyprus to help with a potential evacuation due to escalating violence between Israel and Hezbollah.
Israel says it's intercepted a missile from Lebanon in what appears to be the first time Hezbollah has fired at Tel Aviv. The group said it was targeting the headquarters of Israel's intelligence agency Mossad in retaliation for recent attacks.
Senior sources have told the BBC there's growing unease within the NHS in England about the government's message that it's broken. There's concern some of the comments could result in lasting damage to patient and staff confidence. The Department of Health says it is important to be honest about the scale of the challenge.
And a man suspected of trying to kill Donald Trump at his Florida golf course earlier this month has been charged with the attempted assassination of a presidential candidate. 58-year-old Ryan Ruth faces life in prison if found guilty. Let's take a look at the weather. Helen's here. Hi, Helen.
Hi, both. You were talking about scarves and hats earlier. I was listening in there and thinking you're going to need those at the end of the week. I haven't even had time to tell you so far today that it's going to get much colder by the end of the week, potentially our first widespread frost on Saturday morning. That aside, today, more rain. So for Scotland, it's bright, it's sunny, it's a cold start, as it is Northern England and Northern Ireland, and hence the scarves and hats. But for Scotland, we should hold on to some sunshine after the murk clears away in a few spots. Nothing like the weekend, but we have got showers in the north and the west, and a chilly northeasterly breeze here as well. So 10 in that breeze, 13 for the central belt, 12 or 13 in the sunshine in Northern Ireland. Should stay dry until later, but the cloud tends to increase ahead of the rain later. But that rain, as we turn our attention to England, Wales, is already getting in to Devon and Cornwall, the southwest of Wales, the heavier rain that is. And it's all just going to gradually become more widespread and push its way northwards and eastwards through the day. There'll be a little bit of sunshine ahead of it and some drier weather, but it will set in across most parts of England and Wales by tea time. So some miserable conditions through the rush hour. Another inch of rain to come, and more then for the northeast of England in particular tonight and tomorrow. It does dry up behind it, but there'll be a few showers, and there's a brisk wind to contend with today in the south, but it's a little bit milder, around 13 to 15, a little higher possibly in some sunshine.
And what about the roads, Orna?
So a lot busier now. The M8 and Bristol queues, 19 at Portishead. Two lanes are closed on the M5, sorry. So that's northbound, heading north. M74, south of Glasgow, north at Junction 1A at Polmadee. There was a breakdown. It's left queues of 40 minutes. The M56, one lane down at Junction 7, heading towards Manchester eastbound at Bowden. That's an accident in one lane. The M1, northbound at 28 Alfreton, one lane still closed where a couple of lorries collided. You've got the M1 looking slow, southbound at 22 Colville, an accident in one lane. M25's been really busy today. Lots of incidents. Most of them have cleared, but with queues. 22 St Albans, two lanes still closed in the roadworks clockwise. That's a breakdown. The M2 and westbound at Junction 5 at Sittingbourne, all traffic at a stand now, so it's stationary there. Five vehicles collided. Rotherhithe Tunnel, and that is closed in both directions between Limehouse and Rotherhithe. We've also got some problems with the trains as well. Everything going through Stockport. That's Transpennine. It's also East Midlands Railway, Avanti West Coast, and Northern. Want to mention 5 Live Travel.
The voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
It's Five Live Breakfast, Rachel and Claire with you. 13 minutes. No, it's not. It's 23 minutes to nine. Apologies if you're running for a bus or about to run for a bus. You've probably got a little bit more time. Katie's here in the studio.
Also known as 8:37.
Also known as 8. Why do I do that? Rick's asked me about this. Why don't you just say 8:37?
But
I think you need to know what time you've got left in the hour rather than what's already gone. That's
no,
my thinking.
No, because I picture it visually and then I see. And
right. Oh, okay. You're a visual learner. Anyway, we digress. As interesting as this chat is, let's talk about sport. England are back in contention in their one-day series against Australia. And the standing captain played his part in a big way.
Full delivery, which is angled away past the dive of the keeper. And Harry Brook takes off his helmet and gets applauded to the rafters all around Chesterfield Street. Because they've seen a fine innings.
Not just the ODIs, but this summer I've felt like I haven't performed as well as I could have done. I haven't got the amount of runs I wanted to get. But yeah, it's nice to get a score out there.
Yeah, so an essential 46-run win on the DLS method for England over Australia after the rain got in the way in Durham. But Harry Brook there, unbeaten on 110 and responding well to criticism too, that England were a bit reckless in their style and their comments previously. He says they're trying to show a fearless attitude. So that five-match series now is poised 2-1 to Australia. Gets going again on Friday. In other cricket news, minimum starting salaries are being made equal for men and women in the domestic game. That's going to be from next year at the top counties. The figure for rookies will be at £20,000 and £28,000 for senior professionals.
I loved chatting to the director of sport at Barrow yesterday ahead of their EFL Cup tie at Chelsea. It was wonderful to see all the fans getting on, the coaches. A lot of money came into the club for that EFL tie. Didn't go that well on the pitch though, did it?
Not really. So Chelsea into the fourth round. It was a 5-0 thrashing in the end at Stamford Bridge. 11 changes were made to the team as well. And that reserve team for Chelsea basically costs around £370 million. Yet what's kind of interesting is that there is still such a hunger from those that were on the pitch last night to perform. There's no sitting back. They can't be complacent because Chelsea have such a bloated squad. There's so much competition for first team places. Now, Enzo Maresca said he'd love to play all of his attackers. Who wouldn't? He said if it wasn't for that pesky old need to defend as well.
We can think to play with Nicolas, Cristo, Joao, Cole Palmer, Noni. Fantastic. But then who is defending? Me and you. We go and we need to run back. I really like football and I really like to keep the ball. The problem is that when you lose the ball, then you have to defend.
Oh, that old conundrum again. Manchester City made 9 changes. They beat Watford 2-1. Pep Guardiola's latest update is they're still waiting to have confirmation on the severity of Rodri's knee injury, but did say he'll be out for a long time. Aston Villa 2-1 winners at Wycombe Wanderers. Leicester needed penalties. That was to get past League 2's Walsall. So the action continues this evening as well. More commentary to come. But England take on Australia in Victoria in the third decisive match of their netball series this morning. And we heard from head coach Jess Thirlby be here on Five Live.
We've given ourselves a fantastic opportunity and, you know, if we were to get over the line in this third match, then it'll be the first time any Roses team has beaten Australia in a 3-match series over here. So it's an exciting opportunity and one hopefully we will grab today and give it our very best.
So you can follow updates on the BBC Sport website from 10 o'clock. And look, we started with cricket. I thought, why not end with cricket? Bookend the bulletin. Excitement gets to us all at times, doesn't
it? Yeah, yeah.
So last night, Alex Hartley, maybe England's performance got too much for her, because here she is trying to explain why one-day matches are different from T20s.
You can't just go crash, wang, wang, bollop.
Steady on. Keep calm, everybody.
Crash, bang, wallop.
Wash your mouth out. We're talking about swearing in sport.
Yeah, happens to
us. She
was all right. She just said crash.
Careful. Ballop.
Yeah.
Bollop.
Anyway, can't miss a moment on Sports Extra. That's the latest from BBC Sport, though. And just a reminder, you can listen on your smart speaker by playing BBC Sports News.
Katie, thank you very much. Indeed, it's Five Live Breakfast. And let's return to our top story this morning. The Prime Minister is warning British nationals still in Lebanon to leave as violence escalates between Israel and Hezbollah. After our interview with him yesterday, he headed to New York for the annual UN General Assembly. 700 British troops are also being sent to Cyprus to help possible evacuations.
Well, our political editor Chris Mason is travelling with Sir Keir Starmer and he spoke about what he'd heard on the plane.
So he has said that preparations are now being stepped up for a potential evacuation. An additional 700 troops are en route to Cyprus, which is pretty close. The emphasis from the government is that commercial flights are still available. So they're saying, look, this is not quite like the situation you might remember in Kabul in Afghanistan when the Taliban took over and there was the chaos there. So the emphasis from the British government, if you're in Lebanon, is to get a commercial flight. But they are preparing for the alternative if those flights stop happening and there are still potentially thousands and thousands of UK nationals in Lebanon. The other thing the Prime Minister was emphasising, reflecting what Pat McFadden was saying to you on the programme yesterday, is that now is the time to leave. Leave immediately is what he said when we had a little huddle, as they're known, with the Prime Minister on the plane. And then that wider point, Nick, in your conversation with him on this programme, and that fear that this could be a moment of real escalation, saying that he believes we are potentially at a brink point. We need, as he says, a ceasefire and de-escalation. And this, alongside Ukraine and a number of other big topics here in New York, as the Prime Minister joins the UN General Assembly of a whole phalanx of world leaders here in America.
Well, Sir Mark Lyle-Grant is the former UK ambassador to the UN and former UK National Security Advisor. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, get your views on whether we can get any kind of de-escalation or breakthrough in a moment. But I'm just interested. I mean, you've been in that role when the UK Prime Minister gets off the plane and you're the ambassador and you do the briefing in the car sometimes on the way to where they're going to speak. It's a crucial, I guess it's a crucial audience with the Prime Minister, isn't it? From the ambassador to say, this is what you need to know.
Yes, it's a strange role, the high-level week for the ambassador. It's a mixture of advice and logistics, because, of course, it's not just the prime minister. There'll be seven or eight other ministers in New York, all with different programs, circulating around the many bilaterals, the many sort of multilateral meetings that take place in the margins of the main event, as it were. But I think it's particularly important for Sir Keir Starmer this year, because it's his first speech. So he'll be setting out the tone of British involvement in international affairs on the foreign stage. So he will be treating that very seriously. And the ambassador will be, you know, obviously will have seen an advanced copy of the speech, commented on it, see if it hits the right sort of tone for the audience he'll be speaking to, and offering advice on the various meetings that the Prime Minister will be going to in the margins.
So let's start with the Middle East and the escalation that seems to be happening. I mean, Israel says it's intercepted a missile from Lebanon in what appears to be the first time Hezbollah has fired at Tel Aviv. And they say, well, we were directing that at Mossad. And I guess you could argue the other way as well. We've seen this escalation with missiles being fired in residential areas. Again, Israel says we are targeting Hezbollah. But how significant is Hezbollah firing on Tel Aviv?
It is significant because over the last 12 months in this exchange of fire, it's been a sort of tit for tat within accepted limits, if you like. I mean, obviously horrific for the civilians that are caught up in it. But nonetheless, both sides have been targeting only military installations on either side of the border. But the fact that Hezbollah has now fired a ballistic missile directly at the main population center in Israel, Tel Aviv, is an escalation on their part. And of course, what Israel did with the exploding pagers and walkie-talkies was a significant escalation on their side. So we are seeing escalatory behavior on both sides, and the risk is that it'll just escalate even further.
So how important, for example, then, is Sir Keir Starmer's voice in all of this at the UN in stopping escalation and stopping other major actors getting drawn into this?
Well, he will certainly in his speech be saying, as others have done, I mean, President Biden said the same thing yesterday in his speech, that, you know, calling for restraint on both sides. But the reality is that I don't think it will make a huge amount of difference on the ground what any of the politicians say in New York, because clearly there are dynamics going on the ground, and that won't be influenced by the diplomacy and the speeches in New York this week, unfortunately.
And it's interesting, isn't it? Because President Biden, on his way out, he made a speech yesterday saying, sounding increasingly frustrated that, you know, we need to get this deal over the line between Israel and Gaza. But that seems to be slipping further away. How will what's happened in the last 48 hours feed into that? And who's behind the scenes trying to put the brakes on?
Well, the Americans have been very active in trying to put together a deal, a ceasefire between Hamas and Israel in Gaza. But they haven't been able to do that, and they are deeply frustrated. President Biden personally is deeply frustrated at Netanyahu because he hasn't been able to persuade him to give enough space in terms of its military activities in Gaza to allow that ceasefire to take place. The fighting between Israel and Hezbollah is linked to that because Hezbollah themselves have only started these exchanges in the last 12 months in solidarity of Hamas in Gaza. So they are saying we will continue fighting against Israel as long as there is no ceasefire in Gaza. So the two things are inextricably linked. The Americans are still working behind the scenes. There are American diplomats on the ground trying to put together some sort of ceasefire or restraint agreement between Hezbollah and Israel. And of course, the ceasefire discussions on Gaza are still going, but they are not making any progress. And I don't expect them to. And this recent escalation makes it even less likely that there'll be an early return to diplomacy.
And of course, we saw Ukraine's President Zelensky at the UN seeking permission to fire Western-supplied long-range missiles into Russia. And everyone seems to be saying, you know, this is obviously something he's asked for a while. They've done an incursion themselves across the border. There's lots of question marks about, you know, the success or otherwise of Russia's pushback in the north, especially. But this seems to be also to Trump-proof commitment from the West. Do you think that's what he's thinking? Do you think, obviously, he wants this to happen, but is he worried about what might be coming down the line post-November?
Almost certainly, because of what President Trump has said, that he will solve this conflict within 24 hours of becoming president, President Zelensky must be very concerned that American support, which has been very substantial over, you know, the last 2.5 years, will dry up if President Trump is elected. So he will certainly try, not in so much in New York, but he'll be going to Washington and see President Biden there, and to persuade Biden to allow him to use these longer range Western rocketry missiles into some of the bases that Russia has inside Russian territory. I think the British government is happy for that to happen, but of course can't move until the Americans give the okay. So that is going to be a very important decision-making moment happening in parallel with what's happening in New York this week.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. Sir Mark Lyle Grant there, former UK ambassador to the UN and former UK national security advisor. 10 to 9.
On BBC iPlayer.
I want to take you on tour. I want to take you to India.
Wow! Buzzing mitt.
I've never been anywhere like it.
Freddie Flintoff's Field of Dreams on tour.
We represented England, but we represented something far bigger than that. We represented Preston.
Watch on BBC iPlayer.
Right, a story we have been discussing this morning. One in three children worldwide are now short-sighted and struggling to see things clearly at a distance. Researchers say it's because kids are spending more time on screens, less time outdoors, and the pandemic lockdowns are to blame for the increase. We can find out more with optometrist Rebecca Donnelly. Hi, Rebecca. Hello, Rebecca. Can you hear us?
I can, yes.
Excellent. So does this tally with your experience, with what you're seeing?
Yeah, absolutely. So in the practice that I'm in, we've been doing something called myopia management for a long time, and that's becoming increasingly popular, I suppose, among families with young children to try and slow down the short-sighted progression. So we know that by 2050, 50% of the population will be short-sighted. And COVID was certainly a catalyst in that change. So probably before 2050, 50% of the population will be short-sighted.
Right. We talk about having more time on screens, less time outside. What other factors come into play when it comes to developing visual problems?
Yeah, so we recommend all children, even if they're not short-sighted, in particular if they're not short-sighted, to spend lots of time outdoors, so that can help delay the onset of short-sightedness. So we recommend 2 hours a day outdoors on average.
That's interesting, because I bet a lot of children don't do that, particularly in the autumn winter months.
And particularly in urban populations as well, which is why we tend to see more short-sightedness maybe in densely populated areas like in larger cities in Asia as well.
And sorry, this is a really ignorant question, but what is it about being outside that's good for your eyesight? Is it to do with sunlight? Is it to do with your eyes kind of exercising, focusing at distance?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So both of those, really. So the lux level is certainly important. And even if you stand beside your window inside, if you go outside and stand beside your window, the lux level is much greater. So we can't really mimic that indoors. And also, when you're outside, you don't tend to be looking at things that are much closer to you. So you tend to look far off in the distance as well.
And the myopia management you talk about, how can you then slow down that progression other than the things you've suggested? But it is possible for interventions to have a positive impact, is it?
Yeah, so you can use specialist contact lenses, specialist glasses, and there's also eye drops probably coming to the market soon in the UK as well. They're not currently licensed in the UK, but they are in Australia and Asia.
Right.
And it slows down the rate of change by 50% on average. So obviously for each child as an individual, we don't know how much the myopia management has worked on them unless we did one eye and not the other. But as a general population, when you compare placebo to treated children, it's a 50% reduction in the rate of progression.
Okay, that's all interesting. It may be going up in this part of the world, but actually, compared to Asia, we're not doing too badly. Why is it that short-sightedness is such a problem in that part of the world?
So certainly the outdoor time is a factor, like we talked about urban populations and just very densely populated cities in Asia. Educational pressures are probably also a factor, so increased time spent at near. We do consider ethnicity itself to be a risk factor. So Asian ethnicities, we would say, is a risk for quicker progression and earlier onset as well.
Rebecca, thank you very much for your expertise on this. Rebecca Donnelly, an optometrist, talking to us about the number of children now short-sighted in the world. 1 in 3 is the figure that we're hearing today.
That is so surprising, isn't it? Slightly worrying. From 9 o'clock, we just want to say thank you for everybody who got in touch and responded to Rachel's interview with the Prime Minister this morning. After us at 9, Nikki is taking your calls on Sir Keir Starmer, what your verdict is after that keynote speech at the Labour Party conference. So Nikki joining us on 5 Live after 9 o'clock. Time now to speak to one of the rising stars of British tennis, 22-year-old Sonny Khartal, who recently won her first WTA title, the Jasmine Open, in Tunisia. Sonny, good morning.
Good morning.
I mean, massive congratulations on the win. I know you won it about a week ago now. How do you reflect on that?
Yeah, obviously that week was a crazy week for me. I don't really think many people, including myself, kind of expected that result from that week. And, you know, even now, it's still kind of not fully sunk in a little bit. It's still kind of, you know, this kind of tournament win for me personally felt much bigger than kind of any Wimbledon run or anything kind of like that. This one really stands out.
That's really interesting because you did so well at Wimbledon, getting to the third round, all eyes on Emma Raducanu, and you kind of crept up on the rails there. But you would say this feels different. This feels more of an achievement.
100%. I think, you know, whether that comes to from that week in Tunisia, I hit quite a few milestones or not. But yeah, the kind of feeling I had post-Wimbledon was definitely, you know, it wasn't anywhere near as kind of, I guess, kind of proud and almost kind of as in shock as I have after this one.
Yeah, it's an amazing achievement. I mean, for people who don't know your journey, I mean, I've just watched some really gorgeous footage of you and Emma Raducanu about 10 years ago playing tennis together. This is a journey you've gone on together, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, I started when I was 6. And we kind of grew up going through, you know, 9 and under, 10 and under, 12 and under, playing each other. It was always, you know, you'd play your national finals and it was always be one of us two in the final. And then kind of around 13, 14 is when I kind of started to pick up injuries and kind of went off the radar for quite a few years. So it is nice now to kind of be back on that radar and kind of be mixing in with those peers again.
I mean, and to be injured so young, but actually in the longer run, it has helped you with your resilience because you went into the gym, didn't you? Talk to us about that.
Yeah. You know, I think obviously, you know, 13, 14 is still very young, but I think it does take a toll on your body. Definitely something I'm starting to realise now. You know, I'm still only 22, but I have to prioritize like warming up and things like that, you know, so much more than when I was just, you know, a little kid. But yeah, I kind of,
Strength training's been really, really your friend, hasn't it?
100%. You know, back then, kind of for me, working out, going to the gym, doing the fitness aspect was always felt like a chore. Lockdown happened, obviously everyone was stuck, and so I kind of turned to that and almost kind of fell in love with a new passion for gym and things like that. So for now, I don't view it as a chore, actually. Like, I love doing it. It sets me good for the day. So I think that's also one of the biggest things that has also helped.
Do you think it's also something, because we see it now, don't we? We watch tennis and they do the camera into the kind of the warm-up room before, and you can see all the players going through their drills and everything. And it just seems like everyone is putting so much time into that aspect of their overall fitness that you can't really not do it anymore, can you?
No, 100%. I think if you neglect it, you know, you're going to be found out about it. But yeah, I mean, we, you know, in that warm-up room, everyone is warming up, you know, every single muscle in the body, you know, from head to toe. I think the game has, with time, has become so much more physical. And I think that, you know, people realize that, and, you know, you can't risk the injuries that it could bring you.
Yeah. And you are shining light in British tennis, number four at the moment. What is your hope for the next year? A really exciting time for you.
Yeah. You know, my goal at the start of this year was top 150. So obviously surpassing that, and after Tunisia being top 100, I think I kind of had to set new goals, because obviously that was the next milestone. So I think, you know, I've put myself in a great position for Australia come start of the year. And I think that, you know, obviously the next goal will be top 50.
We wish you all the best, Sonny. We follow your journey with interest here at Five Live. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
Sonny Cartel there, who recently won her first WTA title, the Jasmine Open in Tunisia. And of course, you can hear the Australian Open with Russell and the team right here on Five Live. They get to go to Australia in the winter.
Yeah.
A bad job. Yeah. Great gig.
Quite schlep though, isn't it?
Very right. You've reached that stage in your life.
I'm feeling sciatica down my legs. Just at the thought of the flight. Anyway,
me too.
We'll be back tomorrow from 6. Nikki's up next talking about Keir Starmer. Speak soon.
BBC Radio 5 Live.
Nikki Campbell.
The voice of the UK.
I want you to talk about Keir Starmer. First conference speech by a Labour PM for many a long year. Internal party rumblings apart. Does that make sense? Generally adored in the whole. JFK and all that. But away from the bubble of mutual affirmation at the conference and those rumblings and those arguments, there is the real world. And that's you. That's you and me listening to you right now for the next hour on this. Round of interviews this morning, of course, tougher judgments being exercised. In the hall, when he talks about controlling immigration, welfare reform, people needing to seek work, look for work, many in the hall kind of sat on their hands, but they love the bits about housing plans and nationalising railways and real living wage and ending the doctor strike, and we've only just begun. They lapped it up like Larry the Cat, or Keir's new kitten. So, and as the free gear Keir stuff changed your opinions. Really interesting looking at the texts to Five Live. Always such a good barometer. Some of you, and he did risk the biggest pitfall in politics. Go me. Piety. Piousness. Paragon of probity. All that. And then gifts galore. Free designer glasses and the rest for a man who made £404,000 in 2023. Or is it all froth and nonsense? Some of you are saying to us, shut up. You're a bunch of Tories. Water off a duck's back, as he said yesterday. Phone-ins on Johnson and Truss and Sunak and all the rest. We were the Labour BBC, now we're the Tory BBC. And clearly some of you want to turn us into the North Korean BBC. Get behind the dear leader. Whatever you think, your sober assessment of the Keir leader, your considered assessment, your passionate assessment, your balanced assessment, 08085-909-693-85058. I'm all ears. So get in touch.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
Call free 08085 909 693.